Have you ever wondered how much fish we sell on the Kenai, or how much oil comes from here, what it's all worth, and what it all means? Well, we have too. That's why we created Econ 919, a weekly look at the Kenai Peninsula's economy, what makes it work, and who makes it work. Tune in each Friday at 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. for new numbers, emerging trends, and a bit of trivia. Econ 919, Friday mornings at 9 and again at 5, right here on KDLL, public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host here, Bill Howell, on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. In our next segment, we've got an interview with Mike Healy, one of the owners of Skagway Brewing Company. Hey, Mike, how you doing today?
Hey, good, Bill. How are you doing?
Excellent, excellent. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. The word is you guys have finally got this expansion off the ground that you've been talking about since, I don't know, the last time I was in Skagway. I know you were talking about it then.
Yeah, it's been 7 years. I designed this building for the expansion 7 years ago, and we have just been fighting to find funding and fighting to find the right contractors and just all these things. But it finally came together. And it's going to be pretty big. Right now we're 5,400 square feet total for our brew pub. And the brewery portion of that, well, you've been in that room. I mean, it's like
a
closet.
Yeah, that's a broom closet that you guys are brewing in. I spent 10 years in submarines, and that place gave me claustrophobia. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, we'll no longer be able to say that we're, you might be able to fact check this one, but we keep getting told that we're tied for the smallest brewery in the state currently. We're going to do away with that title. We've been brewing with a little four-barrel system. With very limited fermentation and cellar space overall. And we're moving to a 10-barrel. We just got a 10-barrel from Practical Fusion out of Portland. And with all the different fermenters that we've got and serving tanks, we're using our Brights as serving tanks. We'll be about 400%, an immediate 400% increase in capacity.
That's pretty good. I heard you're looking at having you're going to expand the restaurant size to like 400 seats or something like that.
Well, yeah, the restaurant itself will be doubled in size for indoor seating, and that'll bring us up to 300 or thereabouts. And then we've got a nice balcony out front that'll hold about 50 people outdoors, and then we have a big beer garden with a retractable awning that's going to be, well, anywhere from a we could fit 300 people in there if we wanted to, but we're going to probably focus on some other things in that space, like some games and outdoor activities, things like that.
Sounds way cool. Why don't you tell folks how you got into this game? Do you come from a homebrew background or some other way?
Well, kind of in between. I've had been owned a little cafe here in Skagway since 2003 and was helping a friend out driving some tours. And so I would drive past this brewing equipment that was sitting on this flatbed trailer for years, since I think they closed down in 2002, if I remember right. And I just drive by it every day and I go, man, what a waste. It's beautiful equipment just sitting there. And about that time, a friend gave me a homebrew kit. So I just started homebrewing a little bit. And over the course of that very long winter, very long Skagway winter, I just kind of put two and two together and said, wait a second, all right, maybe I could ask that guy to buy that equipment. And the beer I was making wasn't very good, and I knew that. So I knew I'd have to hire a professional. But that's kind of how it all came together. And then I just kind of started down the sustainability track a little bit with some of the building projects that I was doing. I have been a general contractor for a number of years. And that kind of brought in some of the ideas that we're using in this new facility, like using our waste vegetable oil to make a biodiesel. And then that biodiesel is going to power the boiler, which generates the steam for brewing and domestic hot water and our in-floor radiant heat. And then we've got an indoor aeroponic garden for our restaurants that'll supply all the leafy greens, about 90% of our herbs, and a bunch of strawberries and tomatoes. And so we'll take the CO2 from the brewing process that normally just gets exhausted out the door, and we'll pump that into the garden to boost the production of the garden, which we're anticipating about 15 to 20%, which is quite a bit.
That sounds fascinating. I'll be very interested to see when you have some operating data, exactly how much increase you get with using that CO2. As far as I know, you guys will be only the second brewery in Alaska that's doing CO2 capture. I know Alaskan Brewing is doing it. So I guess that would make you guys number two.
I don't think so either. That's such an expensive process to you know, recapture and put in tanks. And, you know, for us little guys, that's just not a possibility. This is the only thing that we could come up with, you know, as a way to reuse that CO2. And it works out really well because I've been promising my head chef an indoor garden for about 3 years now. So, yeah, it all just kind of came together.
Well, that's great. So you got some plans for your old location, and I understand you just bought another one down by the docks, right?
Yeah, our old location, we're going to turn into a taqueria. It'll be a pretty good-sized restaurant, and then that one will, of course, you know, have all the items we grow in the indoor garden as well, and then our beer. And then, yeah, there's a cute little restaurant down at the on the waterfront that's just been turned over a number of times for the last 6-7 years, and a friend of mine owned it, and so kind of worked out an agreement. So we'll be moving in there in the spring, and we're going to open up a barbecue-themed restaurant.
That sounds good. That's something that I don't recall there being another one in Skagway, so you should do really well with that.
Let's hope so. It's we've got a lot of people saying, yeah, are you sure? This is a lot of new seats in town for restaurants. Can it handle it? And we think that it can because, you know, we get a million people off cruise ships in this town in the summer, and there's just so many people and not enough places to eat right now that a lot of them head back onto the ship, and that's where they'll eat. And then, of course, they stay there for the rest of the day doing, you know, gambling by the pool, whatever they do. But it's a lot of sales tax revenue lost for our city. So we're thinking that we're going to be able to help keep people in town a little bit longer.
Sounds like a great plan. So you've been pretty good up to now about keeping the brewery open through the winter. Are you still going to be doing that with this new, bigger footprint of a place?
We will. Even though the building is 3 times larger, it's very well insulated and very well built as far as, you know, keeping energy costs in mind. So we won't be spending much more or maybe even come in less than what we're spending right now to keep our current location open in the winter as far as utilities go. And also in the winter, there's just not a good place for a lot of, you know, community activities indoors, at least. So this will provide an opportunity for that because we won't have the second floor open to the public in the winter. But if there needs to be an event, we can open the doors and ready to go.
Sounds great. So this new expansion in your brewing capacity, is that going to allow you to start packaging more?
You know, how about we're not sure yet?
That's a good, honest answer.
We will be doing some bombers and some crawlers, you know, just out of our facility there at the bar. So we'll just kind of get a feel for that. But with everything we have going on, we're really just going to focus on dialing things in, and then we'll start really concerning ourselves with packaging.
In looking longer term, looking out of the 5 years, whatever, do you have a preference for how you want to go for packaging? Are you thinking cans? Are you thinking bottles?
Right now, we'd be leaning towards cans. It just, you know, the shipping costs are so expensive with glass that it just makes sense for us.
That does seem to be the trend that everybody's heading in that direction. They're hard to beat for packaging, and it's particularly now that they've kind of solved the labeling issue, which was always the big sticking point before when you had to buy a container full of labeled cans.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, hey, Mike, you got anything else you want to tell our listeners about?
Well, I guess nothing specific besides what I've mentioned. I know it's a long ways away where you guys broadcast from, but I hope someone from that neck of the woods will come over and say hello to us and try some of our beer.
Well, I know you always make it to the Haynes Beer Festival. You guys got any plans to maybe have a festival in Skagway sometime?
You know, it's been talked about. We're very event heavy in this town. So we've kind of been working with the CVB over the years to try to find a decent time. And every time we think we have a good, solid date, someone says, well, wait a second, I have this going on. So I imagine that we'll be picking that up again, but it is pretty difficult. And Haynes does such a good job with theirs that it's tough to compete with those guys.
Yeah, well, you certainly wouldn't want to go head-to-head with that, but I could see you guys maybe doing something in the fall.
Yeah.
On the, kind of on the back shoulder of things. Maybe that would be your window. Unless you want to be crazy and do it in February like we do here in Soldotna.
we're not that crazy, no.
Yeah, I think so. All righty. Well, hey, Mike, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us. Really appreciate it. And look forward to seeing the new digs the next time I can wend my way over to Skagway.
Okay, sounds great. Well, happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays to you. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, KDLL 91.9 FM. We'll be right back.
It's pick-click give time for Alaskans. When you file for the Alaska Permanent Fund dividend, you can support your favorite nonprofit organizations. Do you value public radio? Donations help KDLL provide the news, features, and entertainment programming you trust from around the world and right here at home. Apply for your dividend at pfd.alaska.gov by March 31st and pick click give to help your favorite organizations. Thanks.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. You've just heard Mike Healy talk about his current and future plans for brewing in Skagway. In our next segment, I'd like to give you a brief history of brewing in that historic Alaskan town. What you're about to hear was excerpted from my book, Alaska Beer, Liquid Gold, and Land of the Midnight Sun. So if you're interested in learning more, I would humbly suggest you pick up a copy. The first Stampeders arrived in Skagway less than 2 weeks after the SS Portland had docked in Seattle with the news of the gold strike. On July 29, 1897, when the mail steamer Queen landed these first anxious would-be millionaires on the beach, Skagway was barely a collection of tents. By the first half of 1898, when Skagway was teeming with Stampeders, it was the biggest town in Alaska. In those wild early days, Skagway was under the control of the notorious con man and crime boss, Jefferson Randolph Soapy Smith. In her biography of Smith, King Con, Jane G. Haig describes the state of the town. Quote, Skagway itself was chaos. Only one dock had been completed so far, and most of the gold seekers and their tons of goods were dumped on the beach. If they could not pack them quickly to higher ground, the inexorable high tides would soon swamp them, ruining sacks of sugar and flour, bacon and beans, and perishable supplies beyond redemption. Beyond the beach, the main street, optimistically named Broadway, was a sea of mud. The businesses lining each side were chiefly saloons and crude hotels still housed in tents. Billy Moore's sawmill could not keep up with the demand for lumber. And now hordes of gold seekers were disembarking every day. Heavy snow falling on the summit of White Pass was threatening to close the trail, making all the new arrivals Soapy's unwilling but welcome hostages for the winter. End quote. Here was an obvious market for alcohol in all its forms, including beer. If an excuse was needed, there were many to choose from, starting with the absence of sewers and the lack of safe drinking water in Skagway. In addition, it was common knowledge that drinking beer helped prevent scurvy, one of the most common medical threats in the North Country. A large amount of beer was sent north by brewers such as Rainier Brewing of Seattle and the American Brewing Company of St. Louis, Missouri, whose ABC beer was well known in Skagway. Since beer is 90% water, and water is the one ingredient for beer that Alaska possesses in abundance, imports like Rainier would always be more expensive than locally produced brews. Ads for the time show Rainier selling for 12.5 cents compared to 10 cents for locally produced beer. This price differential shows why local breweries were so quick to open in boomtowns such as Dyea and Skagway. To meet this demand, three breweries opened in Skagway within 3 years. Robert Smith and William Matlock founded the Skagway Brewing Company in 1897, hiring Herman Barthel to be their brewmaster. Barthel was a highly respected and experienced brewmaster from San Francisco. Hiring such a well-qualified individual signaled the partner's commitment to make a quality product that could compete with the imports from Seattle and elsewhere. Barthel arrived in Skagway in 1898. He was a naturalized U.S. citizen, having immigrated from Germany in 1880, and was accompanied by his wife and two sons. Shortly after his arrival, the Skagway News began to contain ads for beer from the Skagway Brewing Company, featuring a seated male figure in a tuxedo. A rival newspaper, the Daily Alaskan, also contained ads for Skagway Brewing. Theirs featured a wrestling bull and lion. Both ads mentioned the brewery's Red Star beer, possibly inspired by the famous Red Triangle of Bass Ale, one of the world's first registered trademarks, and solicited family trade, which referred to beer being purchased for later consumption at home. Clearly, the Skagway Brewing Company was now a going concern. Given that it was built from scratch, it's not surprising that in 1899, the Skagway Brewery was considered one of the best equipped and thoroughly modern breweries on the Pacific Coast. Its annual capacity was 30,000 barrels after an approximately $25,000 investment by Smith and Matlock. Writings at the time described the building housing the brewery as being 4 stories tall, with walls that were 14 inches thick and an exterior covered in corrugated iron. The engine and brew room measured 30 feet by 30 feet and contained a 30-horsepower steam engine that powered the brewery's equipment. Hot and cold running water were piped throughout the building, and the entire structure was heated by steam to maintain the proper brewing temperature throughout the long Alaskan winter. The mash tun was sized to accommodate 30-barrel batches, and the fermentation cellar had a capacity of 800 barrels. There was a large bottling works as well, housed in a separate building. As large and modern as Skagway Brewing Company was, it still faced competition almost from the start. Charles A. Sake arrived in Skagway in December 1897, accompanied by his wife and 2 children. Almost immediately, he purchased land for a brewery between 6th and 7th Avenues and placed ads in the local papers announcing his intention to open the city brewery. He then returned to Seattle to purchase the equipment required for the new venture. Sake was an experienced brewer, having worked for the North Pacific Brewing Company, and announced that he intended the city brewery to produce both lager and steam beer. By the middle of 1900, the city brewery was well established and providing stiff competition to the Skagway Brewing Company. An article in the Daily Alaskan from July of that year describes a visit to Sake's brewery in glowing terms. The city brewery covered nearly 10,000 square feet and 2 stories, and every inch was devoted to making beer. Apparently, Sake's brewing was a very artisanal process, with him being directly involved in almost every step. The paper reported that the brewery had excellent cold storage rooms, which were kept cool using natural ice, and that city brewery placed great emphasis on utilizing a proper lagering process. Sake was quoted as reiterating his commitment to Skagway and to making excellent quality steam and lager beers. And what was certainly no coincidence, in the same month that their rival was receiving such a glowing review, Smith and Matlock of Skagway Brewing held an open house and invited the public to come and sample their pure, sparkling lager beer. This beer was described as, quote, clear, amber in color, and with the most delightful sharp taste, a perfect beer. Smith was quoted describing the quality of his product and crediting the sophistication of his brewery, stating, "Our plant is perfect," end quote. He also bragged about the purity of the brewing water, pumped pure and cold from a depth of 15 feet. As if 2 excellent breweries going head-to-head for the beer trade in Skagway were not enough, for a short period of time, there was a 3rd brewery in the mix. The Gambrinus Brewery, opened by Franz Gasnetter in 1898. It was located on 7th Avenue between Main and State Streets in the same block as the city brewery and also included a bottling plant. Unfortunately, the market in Skagway could not support 3 large, well-equipped breweries, and the Gambrinus Brewery was the first to falter, going out of business in the fall of 1899. It should be noted that the establishment of each of these breweries, as well as the saloons they sold their product to, was technically illegal under the territorial law governing Alaska at the time. In 1898, Alaska was still considered Indian country, with the production of alcohol being forbidden by the Customs Act of 1868. However, with stampeders flooding into the territory, it was clear to everyone that a change was needed. In 1899, President William McKinley signed a bill into law that legalized saloons and established an annual $1,500 fee, equivalent to over $35,000 in modern currency, for a license to operate, with the funds to be used to support public education. Citizens of Skagway voted to accept this type of licensing scheme as opposed to the alternative, which was to require saloons to submit general petitions for a majority of the white, adult, male, and female persons living within a 2-mile radius. It had taken over 30 years, but it was at last no longer against the law to produce, sell, or consume alcohol in Alaska. So what were the beers produced by the Skagway breweries and sold in the town saloons like? We know from their advertisements that the breweries produced both lager and steam beers. Many of the brewers were immigrants from Germany, where lagers were the dominant beer style, so it's not surprising that they were extremely familiar with producing these beers. Lager beers, of which Pilsners are the best-known example, are produced using a strain of yeast that works best at low temperatures, typically just a few degrees above freezing. However, the yeast works slowly, meaning the beer must be stored. Lager is German for to store, for several weeks at these low temperatures. The end result of this process is a clean-tasting, refreshing brew with a nice malt flavor and crisp hop bitterness. Given the primitive conditions that existed on the rough-and-tumble western frontier, it was often difficult to achieve the sustained low-temperature storage needed for proper lager. During the early days of the California Gold Rush in the mid-19th century, brewers in San Francisco were forced to improvise a way to use lager yeast at higher temperatures than normal. The result of their efforts was what came to be known as steam beer, although exactly why it was given that name remains a matter of debate. Steam beer was, and still is, brewed using a lager yeast, but at much higher than normal lager temperatures, resulting in a beer that has some of the flavor characteristics of an ale. As many of the brewers who came to Alaska did so by way of stints at breweries on the West Coast, it's not surprising that they would have become familiar with this uniquely American style of beer. Since many of the miners now flocking to the new boom towns in Alaska also came from that same region, it's again hardly surprising that there was a strong demand for beers made in the style to which they had become accustomed back home. Besides the staples of lager and steam beers, there is also evidence that other beer styles were brewed in Alaska during this period. Porters and stouts were advertised and seemed to have been quite popular, as well as other British styles, such as imitations of the famous Bass Ale. Even with the end of the stampede in 1898, workers continued to flood into Skagway to work on the construction of the White Pass and Yukon Route Railroad. Despite the expense of the annual license fee from 1899, it appears the saloon numbers in Skagway remained relatively high levels until the completion of the route July 29, 1900. Then the bottom fell out of the saloon business in Skagway. As the saloons fell on hard times, so did the breweries that supplied them. During 1900 to 1901, business became very competitive between the breweries and local saloons, thanks to the decreasing single male population of Skagway. Skagway's economy was no longer growing, and it was becoming increasingly clear that it was not going to become a northern metropolis. The beer market was shrinking, and the sale of import beers, such as Rainier at local saloons, provided strong competition to local breweries. By the end of 1901, there had been a serious shakeup in the brewing business in Skagway. The city brewery ceased operations. Charles Sake remained in Skagway, but changed his profession from brewer to saloon keeper. Robert Smith and William Matlock sold the Skagway Brewing Company to its brewmaster, Herman Barthel. The 1902 business license for the brewery lists him as the sole owner. Smith and Matlock left Skagway to pursue other business interests around the territory, though they both retained properties in the town. By the fall of 1902, Skagway had only 7 saloons still operating. The high license fee and decreasing population were draining resources faster than the saloon keepers could bring in customers. Skagway saloon owners instituted a custom that had long been practiced in the rest of the country, but had not been necessary during the gold rush days, the free lunch. Starting in October, as the summer transients left town, all of the saloons engaged in a bitter warfare to see who could offer the swankiest free meal while keeping their drink prices high. It was another sign the saloon business in Skagway was becoming increasingly cutthroat and did not bode well for the future. Herman Barthel did his best to maintain the Skagway Brewing Company as a going concern, but the combination of economics and moralists from the Women's Christian Temperance Union was eventually too much for him. The Skagway Brewing Company closed its doors in 1905. In June 1906, William Matlock, one of the founders of the Skagway Brewing Company, attempted to resurrect brewing in Skagway by providing funding to William Schwarzenberg, another German-born brewer who had come to the United States in 1891. In August, Schwarzenberg began advertising his new business, the Eagle Brewery. It's unclear exactly how long the brewery operated. Some sources indicate it was in business until 1910, but no advertisements appear for it in the local papers after October 1906. It was certainly defunct by 1913 when Matlock filed a civil action against Schwarzenberg to recover the money owed to him. since by then Schwarzenberg was residing outside of Skagway at the Perseverance Mine in Juneau. So ends the story of brewing in Skagway for the next 9 decades. Then, the famous name of the Skagway Brewing Company was resurrected in a brew pub located in the Golden North Hotel. It lasted from 1997 until 2002. In 2007, Mike Healy, a South Dakota native and longtime Skagway resident, spotted an opportunity and bought the derelict brewing equipment. He moved the brewery to a brand new location, 7th and Broadway, not far from where the original Skagway Brewing Company was located in 1898. On July 4, 2007, the Skagway Brewing Company again fired up the brew tanks and opened its doors, welcoming both locals and the thousands of tourists from cruise ships that visit Skagway daily during the summer. Up next, we'll have our closing thoughts for 2018. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Join us for the Veritas Variety Review as we aim to entertain while seeking what is true, with a plethora of mixed media, music, meandering discourse, and maybe a little mayhem. Tune into KDLL 91.9 at 7 p.m. on Saturday evenings, featuring a new thematic perspective with auditory stimulus to augment your analysis of the universe.
Welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here in KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. In our final segment, both for this month's show and for 2018, I want to take a moment to give my profound thanks to you, my listeners. Since this show is pre-recorded, sometimes when I'm writing up these segments and then recording them, I feel like I'm shouting into the void. I can't really tell if anyone out there is listening, and if you are listening, whether you're nodding your head in agreement or grinding your teeth in frustration at what you're hearing. Given that, it really makes my day when I bump into one of you in the course of my business around town, and you say something like, "Oh, by the way, I heard you on the radio. Love your show." It's a validation that I'm not just shouting out to no one, and that you folks are getting something out of these shows. So if you're hearing these words, whether you're listening to the live broadcast or the recorded podcast, please know that you have my greatest appreciation and undying gratitude. This show is really about you and for you. I may be the guy talking, but it's the listeners who truly matter. I hope that each and every one of you has a happy and healthy 2019 and that all of us can enjoy lots of excellent locally brewed craft beer for many years to come. And with that, I'll be closing out Drinking on the Last Frontier for 2018 and leaving you with this final thought from the late, great Frank Zappa. You can't be a real country unless you have a beer and an airline. It helps if you have some kind of football team or some nuclear weapons, but at the very least, you need a beer. Happy New Year. This is KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.